Welcome to The Reserve, a news and thoughts podcast from the Central Verse. I'm your host, Caleb Nygaard, and today is episode number 11. Now, one of the reasons I find the Federal Reserve so fascinating and have for a few years is just all the really strange governance designs that are built into the very system, the very central bank. Sometimes these designs are intentional, and they come from Congress or from the White House or from sometimes they come from inside the Fed itself. They're given a lot of leeway to decide how they run stuff. Other times they come just kind of over time or because of momentum. But these governance design questions have really big implications for balancing some pretty fundamental principles of central banking, things like democratic accountability and technocratic expertise. But anyways, this week, one of these interesting Fed governance issues is at the top of the news. And I couldn't be more excited to have with me to break it all down, Victoria Guida, economic reporter extraordinaire for Politico. You have read her work. You've followed her tweets, especially the super viral non-Fed ones. You've seen her how she translates the complicated mess of financial regulation to us normal folk. And you've seen her get in the big questions at the Fed press conferences. Victoria, thanks so much for coming on.
Excited to be here.
So I've asked you to join. We're going to talk about the Fed board positions and leadership. Randy Quarles, as you reported, I think you were the first one to break this, that Randy Quarles' term as Fed vice chair for supervision and regulation ended on Wednesday, October 12th. And that Biden has not nominated or even announced candidates for or a short list or a long list even for a replacement. But Quarles is still at the Fed as a governor. So I'd like to start by asking if you could just walk us through kind of the basics of these different levels and positions at play here, you know, Fed governor, Fed vice chair for SNR, and then chair of committee on supervision and regulation. There's just so many different kind of hats that Quarles is wearing. I wonder if you could kind of walk us through some of the basics of those.
Yeah, no. So the Fed is so convoluted, and luckily your audience already has some sort of familiarity with it.
Yes.
But you know, at its basic level, right, the Fed board in Washington has a chair and it has two vice chairs. And one of those vice chair positions was created by Dodd-Frank, the vice chair for supervision. And basically, this is the person who's in charge of regulatory and putting out regulations and supervising banks. But you know, one of the main things that Dodd-Frank did is it said that basically the person who's in charge of regulations has to testify before Congress twice a year. So this was sort of an effort to make them more accountable to Congress. Mm. So even though that position was created in 2010, many of your listeners may know that it wasn't actually filled until Randy Quarles took the job in 2017. And the reason for that is because the job was created when Dan Tarullo was in charge of regulations, and he just sort of already was doing that job. There's a lot of speculation as to why Tarullo was never formally nominated for that job, but suffice to say he wasn't.
Sure.
And then there was a brief period after Tarullo left where a man named Jay Powell was in charge of the regulatory portfolio before he became chair. And then, you know, we had Quarles be sort of the first person to have the formal title of vice chair for supervision. Now, all of that to say, you know, the Fed has these internal committees, which I think are just fascinating. And I, you know, you don't really hear people talk about them very much.
Uh-uh.
And, you know, the process for people getting on the committees is not totally clear to me. It seems like, you know, from what I can glean, that it's basically a decision of the chair that's made sort of in consensus with everyone else, sort of like an informal consensus. Mm-hmm. is you know, how I understand it.
Yeah, but not a vote, as far as we know.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of times there can be sort of decisions that are kind of arbitrary. So for example, there's a governor, Michelle Bowman, who's in charge of the Consumer and Community Affairs Committee. But when she came into that job, Lael Brainard still kept the portfolio of the Community Reinvestment Act, even though theoretically that should fall under that committee. So it's like,
there
seems to be a great deal of discretion in terms of like how to handle these different things. So this is like, you know, Fed's, cryptology here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And these committees are not statutory. They're not in any laws. It's all just internal. I guess that's why they can have the flexibility of deciding what goes within, who's the leadership within the committees, as well as what's in the responsibilities of each of the committees. Is that right?
So I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think they're in the law.
Yeah.
But, don't take my word on that. You can ask a Fed scholar. But anyway, so this was all sort of a digression to say one of the committees is supervision and regulation. So when we used to talk about the point person on regulation, like Dan Tarullo, what that meant was, in practical terms, that they chaired the Committee on Supervision and Regulation. So when you had this new position created of vice chair for supervision, what Powell said, actually when Quarles was first being nominated for that job, he confirmed to Congress, because people were sort of curious, like, yes, that means that the vice chair for supervision will chair that committee.
Got it. Yep.
And so this is very interesting, because we've sort of come full circle now, where the Fed seems to be saying that because Quarles' vice chairmanship ended, that then legally means that he's no longer the chair of that committee. But what's strange about it, as I was just saying, is that like there's no real hard and fast rules around these committees. I mean, they do, other committees do operate based on seniority, as I understand it, which is, part of the reason why it was interesting that, Quarles as vice chair took over that committee, even though, he didn't have any kind of seniority on it. Basically, the question is, how long does the Fed wait for a vice chair for supervision nominee before they decide to move ahead and put someone in that job to sort of run regulatory policy? Because it kind of seems like the Fed for now is basically just like, we're in a holding pattern. We're basically not going to do anything on regulations right now, unless the board decides together that it's important. And it's just a really odd situation.
Yeah. And there are these, I wonder if you can put it in the context of the like terms ending and how does this play into the Biden waiting for the announcement of who will be the chair, but then there's now multiple positions that are now open. How does this kind of play into that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, so you could make the argument that this increases the urgency or decreases the urgency of nominating a vice chair for supervision. So it kind of depends on what your take is. I mean, basically not having anyone in charge of regulations is not great if you feel like there need to be new regulations that should be put out. You want that work to start as soon as possible. But from the perspective of people who really didn't like Quarles, having him no longer be sort of the point person on this basically means, well, at least, there's not anything else that he's going to do that, that we don't like. Right. So I do expect, I mean, I don't really have any inside information on this, but I do think that it would make sense for the vice chair for supervision job to be announced alongside the announcement of who's going to be the chair, just because I think that politically it makes sense for those to be packaged together. But we'll see, because if they are packaged together, I mean, typically by early November you do get a Fed chair announcement, just because you want to give plenty of time for the confirmation process to play out so that there's a smooth transition from the end of the chair's term to the start of the new chair's term, whether or not Powell stays.
Right.
So if they are packaged together, we should find out the answer within, you know, the next few weeks of who will be heading up regulatory policy. But that is under my theory that these are going to be packaged together. If they don't do that, then, you know, maybe the Fed will at some point have to decide how to handle who to put in charge of that committee. And by seniority, by the way, it would be Lil Brainard.
Oh, wow. Okay. There you go. And I remember, I think this was over the summer, Quarles can stay as a governor for a really long time if he'd like to. And I think he told you that his wife is like a great niece or something of Mariner Eccles, who stayed on as a governor after his chair ended. And I think he was implying, and I just want you to kind of maybe talk about that interview, but I think he was implying that he'd stay at least past this vice chair, which has turned out to be true because we're recording this on Friday and that ended on Wednesday. Do we have any inclination of how long he'll stay and kind of what he's maybe thinking about there and how that would affect the kind of the nomination of his replacement in the vice chair position?
Yeah. So, you know, as you said, that when I talked to him this summer, I asked him if he planned to stay through the end of his term as chair of the Financial Stability Board, which is an international standard setting body that he is the head of. And he confirmed that he would stay through the end of that term at least. And that's the beginning of December.
Okay.
And then, as you were alluding to, also his underlying board term doesn't end until 2032. So he could stay for a really long time. Although I will say, I took his response to me, like, I don't, if you watched the video, I kind of laughed when he made the point that, you know, Mariner Eccles stayed longer. Yeah. And I was like, are you going to stay until 2032? I do think he was being a little bit cheeky. I don't know that he was actually pledging to stay until 2032, but basically I took that response as like, I'm not going to tell you how long I'm going to stay, and not like, I am going to stay, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't, and since there's an open seat on the board in general, Biden could nominate a completely new person. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. No. And I think it's funny because you hear some discourse of people, you know, certainly on Econ Twitter, talking about that open seat and how it hasn't been filled yet. But I've always been kind of mystified by that conversation because if you want a new vice chair of supervision who's not on the board, you need that seat for that job. So I don't know why you'd prematurely fill it.
Right.
But I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now there was one other angle on this that I wanted to ask, and you briefly mentioned that the kind of the history on Tarullo taking being the committee chair, and then Powell briefly, even though Powell wasn't the the vice chair, and neither was Tarullo officially. I wonder, you know, you were part of, you kind of led this interesting conversation on Twitter, I know, earlier this week about what that means for the future of this position. And is the Fed committing themselves to not filling that kind of chair position or those responsibilities whenever there's a vacancy? And I'm wondering if you can just kind of talk through some of the sides of that conversation, and also if you have any thoughts on whether you think it's something that the Fed will do in the future or not. I'd be interested in that.
Yeah. So I think there are a ton of unanswered questions as a result of this. I mean, my one clear takeaway is that they see chairmanship of the Supervision and Regulation Committee as tied to the position of vice chair for supervision. But that doesn't tell us anything about, like, is there a higher hurdle for who you select to chair that committee now that there is a vice chair for supervision, especially since, as we've been talking about, you know, people have chaired that committee who aren't vice chair for supervision since the position has existed.
So I
will say that from what I know of the Fed, they tend to make decisions like this with an eye to the future. So even though, I mean, I think we all know that, like, the Fed is aware of the political context
right now, and I
hardly think that that was irrelevant, right? But from a legal context, I think they also probably wanted this to be a precedent that would have relevance going forward, because even though the Fed does take politics into account and the things that it does, it doesn't like to be viewed as political. And so they have to sort of balance that, right? Of, like, you know, taking into account the politics, but also, like, is this something that will make sense in the future?
Right.
So so I do think that this decision does have relevance for future vice chairs for supervision. But as I said, like, the precedent that they're setting is a little bit murky.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really well put, that they are very conscientious about decisions like this. They know it does set kind of a precedent, but they therefore then make the precedent that they're setting broad enough or open enough for interpretation, that they could then maybe be a little flexible in the future if they decided. And it may just mean the chair at the time has a different feeling about it.
Right. Yeah. So I think this is super fascinating. I mean, obviously, from a policy standpoint, it's relevant because it's who's in charge of regulations. But it also just is kind of like what you were getting at the beginning. It's just sort of like a prime example of how strange the Fed's governance structure is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's awesome. Are there any other final thoughts on this story or anything that I didn't bring up that you'd like to mention here before we wrap up?
Well, I think that it will be really interesting to see how long Quarles stays. My expectation is that he, you know, won't stay longer than a few months in, you know, past his vice chairmanship ending, but, you know, I guess he could surprise us. It's his prerogative. So that's sort of an interesting question in terms of, like, you know, the votes on the board, if you want to change regulations, if he's still there. I know that's something that a lot of progressives have been, you know, kvetching about.
Yeah. And it would change the, you know, I think most people are baking in, like, you know, when counting how many picks Biden will have, most of those counts include his Quarles seat. And so that would change that as well.
Right. Yeah. And then I am very excited to see who the next vice chair for supervision is, because there is nothing more exciting than bank regulation.
Cheers to that. Cheers to that. I can't think of a better way to end it than there. Victoria, thanks so much for coming on. All the tweets can be found at VTG2. I'm on Twitter at Caleb Nygaard. Subscribe and share this show. Until next time, thanks for listening. Thanks, Victoria.
Thanks, Caleb.